Okay, one of those days where you wish you had another couple of hours. It's just not enough time in the day. So much going on out there. We have this hour, of course, a number of important pieces of information to present for you in order to help you make your way better through these ever-worsening and darker times. And I'm not being melodramatic about that. There's nothing good out there that we have been able to see or discern anywhere. It's getting to be, I guess, on orders of magnitude worse. We're going to do several things this hour. We want to go back to a statement by Nick Szabo in a 1993 essay that he wrote called Green Goo, Life in the Era of Humane Genocide. This was a very portentous forecast of what was ahead. That, among many other things as well. You there, partner? How are you tonight?
I'm here, Jeff. Doing okay. Trying to stay cool.
You're cool. You can't help it.
It's been
Very
hot
cool.
here. Really, really.
Yeah.
Hotter than it's been all summer. It's very unusual.
Well, they're playing with the weather and
It's
nothing new.
something.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah. So, okay. We have, I think, first to mention Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who is certainly world-renowned for her efforts in this field of trying to straighten out the lies and myths, truths that are being proffered and promulgated all over the internet by people who should know better but don't. Anyhow, Sherry has not been a pro-max or mask version. She doesn't like masks, all right? She's been very outspoken against masks. That's fine. We have a different opinion, as you all know. Nonetheless, Sherry Tenpenny has had apparently a stroke. Tell us what you know about it. And she went ahead and talked about it briefly, but rather circumspectly. She didn't come out and say it, but it's pretty obvious, I think.
Yeah, so I came across it on her Substack. She's got a Substack titled Tenpenny Walking with God dot Substack dot com. Sometime last week, and it said vaguely that Dr. Tenpenny is recovering from a serious health-related event. Went on to say Dr. T is greatly touched by the hundreds of texts, emails, and messages of blessings, prayers, and sincere concerns. Although she cannot respond to them all, please know they have been received with love and gratitude. For those who have her cell phone number, we kindly ask that while she is focused on recovery, messages be sent through social media or her team to give her space and quiet to heal. But other than that, I've not seen anybody pick up on the story. She did describe in her Substack that had been having what appears to be some symptoms, and then went in
Blood
for a CAT
pressure.
scan. Yes, high blood pressure for some time, I guess, and symptoms enough to where she had a CT scan of the head, where it was determined that she'd had a stroke. Now, we all know she's been under tremendous pressure lately, and I would even say for the past 3 years, she was one of the first people to come and speak out about this fraud that's been perpetuated on the global population. And she has really never left the battlefield. So
No,
it was
she's
probably a
7 days a
confluence
week. She doesn't
of
stop. Right.
running herself ragged, and I mean, she has, not held back in terms of getting out there with people, being with people, traveling, attending events, just nonstop. So,
You have to, when you're out doing that and pursuing that kind of a lifestyle, you must be prepared to take the consequences should they unfortunately come your way. And you just cannot go up to hundreds of people, shake their hands, be in rooms with people, 5, 10 people in a small enclosed space. You can't even be at a large event anymore. The times are they're different. They're just not safe. I guess that's the best way to put it. It's not safe to engage in those behaviors. You may get
No,
shed
I
upon.
mean,
And she
people are
likes to call it
finding
transmission. That's fine. Go ahead.
they're learning the hard way what biological warfare entails.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we wish Sherry well, and Hopefully she can get her blood pressure under control and have no more stroke issues. You don't want that. One wonders, though, you know, given the amount of direct public contact she seems to have always engaged in, has she been shed upon, and is this related to a spike infestation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? It's possible. And
I wouldn't rule that out at all.
No. We don't like to point that way because we're not there. We're not looking at her MRIs and CAT scans. We don't know. But she does have a lifestyle that would seemingly put her in danger. All right? Just leave it at that. Okay. Now, and that goes for all of you out there as well who are working in an office or a job environment in a small enclosed space with a number of people who have taken 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 shots with the newest one coming out next week. And just remember that it has nothing to do with the most recent variants at all. It goes back to the, it's not the XBB, it's one after that. I can't remember which one it was, but it's an Omicron subvariant of some kind. It's obviously a package, in our view, to administer another dose or manipulative DNA kind of therapy. It's a weapon. They're going to induce more things in people with this shot. The more they can get people to take this, not only will they get those people in their crosshairs, but they'll actually have those people shedding very vigorously for 2 or 3 weeks after the shot. That's the common understanding of how shedding can increase and decrease, especially after a booster shot. Remember that. Somebody tells you, I got my shot yesterday. Get the hell away from them. Don't stay there.
Yeah, that does seem to be the worst. You know, some businesses have had a policy in place since this became known that the shedding is a thing. They ask people not to visit their business for 2 weeks after they've had a shot.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. That's interesting.
You know, you're relying on somebody's goodwill to comply, but
Right. Well, good luck. Okay. Here's a story that is of interest. I have not seen or heard much like this in a long time. It's a House subcommittee, and they have really gone after Tony Fauci and HHS Secretary Becerra as being basically acting illegally, unconstitutionally, and they're demanding that something be done about it. Now, I haven't seen a verbally aggressive stance by anybody in the House in a long time, so I thought it would be interesting to play this because it directly relates to what we discuss here all the time, that is the deployment of the most dastardly and dangerous, deadly bioweapon ever unleashed on humankind, and that's what we're dealing with. So here's a little clip. Did you get to see this, by the way?
Not yet, no.
Okay. Here's a clip, and I think they introduced themselves, but there are three of them, so take a listen.
Well, good afternoon. We're all members of the Energy and Commerce Committee, and we're here today because HHS Secretary Becerra has failed to follow the Constitution and the law. There's been a complete breakdown of accountability at the agency that has lost the trust of the American people, especially during COVID-19. 14 NIH officials, including Dr. Fauci, held unlawful positions and exercised authority that they didn't have, which included approving $26 billion in grants.
Nice to hear, huh? Yeah. Have you heard anything like that lately?
No.
No. I want to listen to that again. Here. That's not the whole thing, by the way.
All right.
Well, good afternoon. We're all members of the Energy and Commerce Committee, and we're here today because HHS Secretary Becerra has failed to follow the Constitution and the law. There's been a complete breakdown of accountability at the agency that has lost the trust of the American people, especially during COVID-19. 14 NIH officials, including Dr. Fauci, held unlawful positions and exercised authority that they didn't have, which included approving $26 billion in grants. This is unprecedented, and it calls into question the validity of every decision that these officials have made since December 2021 to June 2023, including Dr. Fauci's awarding a new grant to EcoHealth Alliance, which is, but what is even more egregious has been Health and Human Services cover-up. For more than a year, the administration has misled our committee throughout this investigation, and our question has been a pretty simple one. Can you show us the documents that Secretary Becerra followed the Constitution and the law in reappointing these 14 senior officials who exercised immense power and authority? The question, can you show us the documents? And we're still waiting. There needs to be accountability. No one is above the law. Americans need to know that their tax dollars are being spent responsibly, effectively, and lawfully, and that the people making these decisions are lawfully authorized to make them. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the chairman of the Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee, Morgan Griffith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I adopt all the things that Chairwoman Rogers just said. But let me say this. This is very frustrating. It is typical of the Biden administration not to follow the rules, not to pay attention to the law. This law was put in as a good governance section. The reappointment of these agency heads was put in as a good government section of 21st Century Cures. And the idea was, let's take a look at various bureaucrats and make sure that they're being reappointed and not reappointed as a matter of course and not reappointed by somebody below the secretary, but reappointed by the secretary. And he didn't do it. And we didn't see any evidence of it. So we wrote a letter 16 months ago and said, hey, what's going on? These people don't appear to have been reappointed. And they've basically played a shell game since then until a couple of weeks ago, saying, oh, it's all right, everything's okay, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, it's all fine. And then suddenly, eventually they must have gotten around to realizing they were in violation of the law, and so they tried to do it retroactively. But everything, as the chairwoman said, from the end of December of 2021 until about 2 weeks ago, is now called into question. Every programmatic decision, every policy decision, and every grant award has question marks around it now, and I suspect the American taxpayers are going to pay millions of dollars defending lawsuits from various groups and various organizations that think they were either done wrong or they didn't like the policies that came out during that time period, because now it's clear that the administration and Secretary Becerra did not follow the clear meaning, the clear wording of the law. And unfortunately, this administration continues to do that. It needs to stop. And that's part of why we have Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee, so we can find out what's going wrong and try to get it fixed and try to make sure this doesn't happen again. And that's why getting the word out so that the administration knows this is not the way to run the shop. And we got to get it right.
How about bringing these people up on charges? I mean, what I've just heard is nice to hear, but let's get some concrete action. I don't want to hear about how they sent a letter 16 months ago and, gee, it was never answered. These people have authority. They can bring charges. That's what needs to happen.
I'll introduce my colleague who's been working on this with me. Brett Guthrie is chair of the Health Subcommittee. Thank you so much for all your work.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for your work and the chair's work and the committee's work. But for more than a year, Dr. Fauci, a highly paid public employee at the time, served unlawfully and without proper appointment. It was during this period he awarded a new grant to EcoHealth Alliance and serves as the chief medical advisor to President Biden's COVID-19 response team. In this role as top COVID advisor, he used his position to recommend mandates. It is unfair to the American people that while he held this position unlawfully, he used his platform to be the voice of science and shame those who, with alternative point of views, in addition to push for questionable public health guidance policies. This is a complete breakdown of accountability at an agency that has lost the American people's trust, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. This also calls into question every decision each one of these 14 individuals made during the time. Greater accountability is needed. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. I think that's... I'll give her a few more seconds here.
And just before we move to the Q&A, I wanted to address HHS's latest statement on their failure to follow the law, because they've changed their story many times, and their latest defense is also not true. So they are referencing an entirely different process, what is called Title 42 Special Consultants. And this is different than what we are talking about as far as the requirement for the reappointment or the appointment of IC directors. IC directors require the secretary's approval, and HHS should know the difference, and they can't hide behind this claim. But it's after a year-long investigation that we've not seen the evidence that the administration fought. We've not seen evidence that other administrations, so they're claiming right now that other administrations have failed to follow this reappointment process. We do not see that evidence. They are conflating. There's two issues. There's the Title 42 special consultants, and then there is the process of appointing or reappointing the IC directors.
Okay. So 14 people were obviously, let's just be kind, inappropriately reappointed. Without procedure, without law, unconstitutionally reappointed. This is, again, a little glimpse of the inside of the criminal corruption that is running virtually the entire Biden, Bolshevik communist regime in our nation's capital. We've lost our government. We no longer have a government of, by, and for the people. It is not a representative government. It is a government of, by, and for criminality. And I think you just got a good glimpse at it. I wish they had been more aggressive in terms of what they proposed to do if they were not dealt with and given satisfaction immediately. Maybe that'll happen. I don't know. But it's nice to hear. It doesn't happen very often. So there you go.
Yeah, it's hard to get your hopes up, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, so Peter McCullough has put out another short video, and this is an interesting one. But before we get there, I think we should take a look at this Nick Szabo, spelled S-Z-A-B-O, Nick Szabo and his 1993 essay. It's up in headlines now. It's right there. Look for our little section on the bioweapon, and you'll find it there. Nick Szabo's 1993 essay, Green Goo, Life in the Era of Humane Genocide. And we've got the whole PDF up there, and then there's the quote as well. Go ahead. You were the one to bring this out first, and it was very shrewd of you, because this is an early forewarning of what was to come.
Yeah, this was written remarkably back in 1993 at the sort of the advent of nanotechnology and our ability to manipulate matter at that nanoscale level, which would include coming up with different versions of synthetic biology, being able to modify a genome of an organism to create a completely new organism. So Nick Szabo, who I believe this is the same Nick Szabo that was the founder of Bitcoin. I've been trying to verify that, but I don't know. Anyway, he was part of this group way back then called the Extropians, which...
I think it's the same guy. I think you're right.
Yeah, it probably is. The Extropians were the forerunners of these transhumanists, I would say. But he was foretelling of the implications of this synthetic biology that was being developed now, that we figured out how to do it, and he called it green goo, not to be confused with the black goo, but green goo because it was somewhat biological in nature, so, you know, it would derive from something natural, but it was synthetic in that it had been altered or adulterated by man. And his warning was to probably, being that this is likely unavoidable and it would be used to control populations and reduce populations, that the best strategy might be to learn as much as you can about a whatever green goo was in circulation or been unleashed, and then figure out the vectors that enabled it and do your best to avoid those vectors. And he stated it very clearly, and I think that's probably a pretty good strategy given what we're living through right now. And the reason we bring this up again is because we are constantly being inundated with these nonsense narratives that serve only to distract from people understanding how they're being assaulted with this weapon. Now, the latest thing was apparently there's Marburg virus in the lipid nanoparticles that are being called hydrogel that are in the vaxxed population now, and they're going to be triggered to explode and release their payload on October 4th, I think it is, through the 5G network.
What Erica's doing is relating a current story about another forecast of doom and gloom and disaster. Whenever you see a forecast with a date on it, be doubly careful. Just FYI.
Yeah, that's true. And so this is being pushed around by this Todd Callender, attorney Todd Callender. He's the same one that saw a few months back was telling us there's cesium-137 in these vials. You know,
what happened to
we're
that
willing
claim?
To entertain pretty much anything because, you know, we don't really know what's in these, and they could vary from lot to lot. But never once have these people making these wild claims been able to substantiate what they're saying.
No, they just go on to the next hustle.
Yeah. And, you know, the scientific method demands that, first of all, you approach any of these claims with skepticism and ask to see their materials and methods. How do they arrive at this conclusion or information?
And that's called holding people to accountability, and it never seems to produce any serious results. It doesn't.
No. These people are being allowed to make these claims without being challenged. No. Now, you contrast that with the discovery of the DNA plasmids that was made rather serendipitously by this Kevin McKernan, who's a geneticist and had worked on the Human Genome Project, long legacy in this field. He made the discovery, checked his work, and made it public and opened it up for scrutiny and invited other researchers, labs around the world to attempt to duplicate the results to confirm them. And now, so far, five labs have done that. So his claims, I think, have merit. These other things, I'm willing to entertain them, but none of them persuade me that.
No. Todd Callender is his comment about cesium-137 just turned into vapor and went away. There was nothing coming of it. Nothing was determined. No proof was offered. He's very slick. He's what I'd call a slickster. He's a very glib talker. He makes statements that are so matter of fact, the average person would probably accept them as being true. It's just how you say it. It's not what you say so much, it's how you do it. And this guy is really good at what they used to call palaver, which is another word for talking. He's excellent at it. So be careful. Just go slow, all right? That's our best counsel. All right, Nick Szabo. What did Nick tell us 30 years ago?
All right, let's take the quote.
You have the quote?
I have the quote.
All right.
In his essay, he says towards the end, the best personal strategy may be to learn as much about a green goo's disease vectors as early as possible and train oneself to avoid the situations and behaviors that tend to enable those vectors.
It's right there. Now, green goo.
It's hard to,
yeah.
You know, if you're obsessed about 5G towers and Marburg coming at you, you're not going to notice the Oriental woman handling the butter at the Trader Joe's.
No, no. And the idea that 5G, and a lot of people talk about 6G as if 6G is actually out there or about to be out there. It's not. 6G is a long way off, another year or two, they say, at least. So don't buy into that. You hear 6G, kind of just back away. The idea that 5G can cause liquid nanoparticles to explode in your body or hydrogels or whatever, releasing Marburg, is science fiction stuff. You want to run with that? Go ahead. But wait for the science. There's no science to back it.
No, there really isn't, and that's not to diminish the very serious consequences of this 5G technology. This is going to harm and damage and probably kill a lot of people because it's so...
We don't even need the shots for it to do that. It's awful.
Right. And it'll make any illness you have infinitely worse. These frequencies are so unnatural and so disruptive to the human body and any life form. I mean, there's plenty of studies out there that, of course, they you know, don't want you to know about. But animal studies and it was a military technology, so the military knows what this stuff can do. It's bad news. But again, I when you're fixating on that, you're not paying attention to how this particular bioweapon that we've been assaulted with right now is doing its damage.
And remember what we talked about in the last program? The evidence now is that at least 2 years after you get the injection, it is still hard at work in your body to destroy your body, from the blood to your major organs to your brain.
That's the infection. Did you say injection? That's the infection.
Thank you. The infection of the actual coronavirus will maintain its evil for 2 years in your body, and maybe longer. That's what we know so far.
Well, that's, you know, the collateral damage from that infection is pretty severe. And, you know, a similar issue arises with Ebola. People who have had Ebola, they're down for the count for a good 2 years trying to recover from that. And, you know, part of it is just the overwhelming damage from the inflammation and oxidative stress. I mean, you're actually sustaining tissue and organ damage that needs to be repaired. And then whatever viral debris is left has to be eliminated, and that can be problematic because a lot of those proteins that comprise the virus are irritating to the immune system. And that's when you can end up having autoimmune diseases from this thing. Not to mention the hit that the microbiome takes.
As far as we know, it's very bad news. As far as we know, odds are that virtually everyone who's taken these bioweapon injections has developed, subclinically, they may not know it, myocarditis, pericarditis, endocarditis. They've got heart problems, and they don't know it. Now, we're going to hear Peter McCullough talk about that here in just a moment. And there are many people who have been diagnosed with pericarditis, for example, and they're trying like hell to recover from it, to make a comeback, like Damar Hamlin, if Mr. Hamlin is still even alive. I'm not convinced he is. But at any rate, Peter McCullough is going to talk about a professional basketball player, not in this country, another country, who had terrible problems after being injected. And well, you'll hear the story in just a moment. But the idea of trying to defeat this bioweapon-induced pericarditis is not an easy thing to approach. Your body is not able to throw this off and just get better real quick. You can't take a few supplements and have this go away. It's there.
No.
And it's lurking, and it's stealth. And you don't know because your heart, you don't feel what your heart is dealing with. Okay.
I just keep going back to that bodybuilder, Joe Lindner.
Oh, yeah, Lindner.
Joe Ascetic, yeah. That, you know, he had, what, four Pfizers, I think? And he actually went to have his blood cleaned, and the plasmapheresis.
Twice.
Now, there's different types of plasmapheresis, but, I mean, he had two rounds of it, and that should have removed a lot of the offending material, and yet he died of an aneurysm. And, yep. he did not look sick.
No. Well, again, I go back to what I've said so often. You go out and about, and you go to the store, you go out, and you see people all day, and you don't know that they're sick. Many of them don't know they're sick. They've been injected. They're still feeling pretty good. But this takedown of life within the body is going on 25 hours a day. And eventually, you may be very surprised, like these people going in for a complaint, and they get worked up, and, gee, they find out all of a sudden they have stage 4 cancer. They had no symptoms, no idea that they had it, and they're gone in a week. So people looking and acting normal, don't take that seriously anymore. You can't.
Yeah.
You just don't know. All right, here's anything you want to add to Peter McCullough before
no,
we play him?
Go ahead and roll it.
All right, it's a shorty. Roll it. That's showbiz talk. All right, here we go.
And so some of that acute risk is gone. I think the case to look at is the case of Oscar Cabrera Adames. I don't know if you heard of this case, Seth?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a notable case. So in 2021, Adames from the Dominican Republic is an international player, basketball, takes the shots. He has a cardiac arrest on the court. I mean, just a complete face plant. And they have to do CPR, shock him. They saved him. Yeah, that's Adames there. And he's taken out of basketball, which is the right thing to do. He's treated like I'm treating patients in my office. And then he's trying to recover and come back to playing international ball. And he's in a health center, and he has a medical stress test done. You can see that the leads are taped in. Medical stress test means there's a crash cart, there's defibrillator, IV, all the drugs we need. And Seth, he dies on the treadmill. This guy is fit as a fiddle. He dies on the treadmill. This case is important. It means that, A, if someone has a cardiac arrest with sports, they can arrest 2 years later. That applies to Damar Hamlin with no ICD. It also applies to, like, Vince Iwichukwu. Yeah, there's Adames that says stress test right before he died. On the right is right before he died. So the case of Adames has to be looked at very carefully, because if one can die 2 years later after the shots from myocarditis, you know, all bets are off if we're out of the woods or not. The other paper that's notable is by Lee and colleagues, L.I. and colleagues. Huge study, Seth, 750,000 people who've taken two shots in 2021 versus 1.5 million who didn't. And they were evaluating the retinal arteries and retinal veins on scanning. And they found really an ominous finding. There were micro blood clots traveling through the retinal arteries and veins of those who took the shot. Now, it wasn't everybody. It was a small percentage, maybe 2%. But it was ostensibly zero in people who didn't take the shots. So what I'm telling you is there are people who take the shots 2 years later where the blood clotting processes are not the same. Heart function may not be the same. Risk for blood clots is still elevated. Risk for heart disease is elevated. You know, potentially risk for stroke, clearly risk for blood clots, immunologic problems. And I think the big wild card out there is cancer, Seth. And I'm not ready to call cancer right now.
Okay, so I think you get the picture. And the idea of micro blood clots circulating in the arteries of the optic nerve area in the eye, there are lots of people who have vision problems after getting the shots. That's showing up now. And if the microclots are in the blood flow around the eye, they're everywhere. They don't know to stay around the eye. They can be anywhere in your body.
That's right.
Looking for a place to lodge and begin to shut down blood flow at the capillary level. And what happens when that occurs? Cells die. Brain cells die, personalities change, emotional stability can go out the window. There's endless stories of people who are now nasty, rude, argumentative, violent, and that's just not who they are. I guess were, because they seem to be that way now. So, and you heard Peter McCullough say that up to 2 years after the injection, which goes along with what I said about the infection earlier, both seem to have a two-year fuse on them. And that's minimal, because we don't have 4 or 5 years to look back on and test and evaluate.
Yeah, we're still collecting the data.
2 years, shots or not, doesn't matter. You get that COVID virus, and you can look forward to 2 years of being in danger. And that's not a joke. Now, does that mean, after you've gotten over the virus, that you are shedding from the virus the infection? Now, if you've gotten the shots, we know you're shedding. And I would suggest that common sense would proffer that just being infected would make you a shedder too, at least initially. Maybe later on you're not. I don't know. But shedding transmission is real.
If we look at the animal kingdom, I'll use cats as an example. Probably one-third of all cats are chronically infected with a feline coronavirus that takes up residence in their gastrointestinal tract. And they will shed it intermittently, not all the time. And they're not sick. They can tolerate this virus just fine. But they can contaminate the environment, and that's how another cat would pick it up. And, you know, it can go either way. The cat just overcomes it and is immune for life, or they become a chronic carrier of it and are a source of infection for other cats. The danger with the feline coronavirus is that if something happens to the cat's immune system, and that virus can get out of hand, and when it does, it's lethal. But the interesting thing is, and they know this from cats living in catteries, the lethal form doesn't spread to other cats, usually. In other words, just because one cat comes down with the fatal form, it doesn't mean you're going to lose the entire cattery. So, again, we have an example of where it's the host, the susceptibility of the host to that pathogen that determines whether it's going to be a problem or not.
Got it. Okay. Cancer. We haven't talked about cancer yet. We have to put that on the table as well. I mentioned turbo cancer, and there are a lot of people out there now who have AIDS. When you have AIDS, your immune system is compromised. You all know the drill by now. And all sorts of things can walk in and set up shop in your body, unbeknownst to you. That's where these stage 4 turbo cancers are showing up. People think, I didn't know. I didn't have any symptoms. I felt fine. And then they are gone in a week or two or a month. It's a stunning thing. What these shots do, literally, is create airborne AIDS, called VADs, among the people who have been injected. They are now weakened. Their immune system is I don't know what percentage of capability it still retains, but it's not good. So they have VADs. And when you have VADs, the door is open for all kinds of things. And then you have, at the same time, the shots are doing their dirty work in your body, in all your major organs, in your heart, your brain. All the people with myocarditis out there know what we're talking about. And those poor people are miserable. They have pain in their chest all the time. They can't get rid of it. That's not a quality of life. There are people who do talk about checking out. They're just sick of it. They don't want to live like this anymore. And that's going to become more common, I think.
Well, I did notice quite a bit of rage percolating when this talk of mandating this next booster came up.
Yeah.
Every single one of these groups that is devoted to some sort of vax injury, these people are pretty upset at those words.
I think that's expected. There is going to be a fairly substantial, if not a major, backlash about any mandating of anything like that.
Yes. Yes.
Even mask mandating, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
People are done. I think what the controllers will simply do is come in through another door. They'll just release another pathogen that they've created in their laboratories. It could be a hemorrhagic variant of something. And all you need,
Look like it's on the table. There's quite a bit of talk of that, some sort of hemorrhagic thing, whether, you know, Marburg, I doubt.
Why classic Marburg when they can make their own? They can derive
anything they want from it. Yeah, well, there's this disease X that they're talking about, which could be a complete novel designer synthetic virus.
Hemorrhagic virus. Yep. Yep.
And maybe it's just aerosolized particles of something, like a spike protein, that can induce some sort of hemorrhagic fever.
So if there's an enormous backlash about the new booster, which I don't think there's going to be. I just think people just won't take it. I don't think there'll be much of an outrage visible in the mainstream media. But people are lining up and getting ready for it. That's the sickening part. That's very sad to hear about.
I mean, I've seen these comments on social media. And then, of course, you know, being social media, you never know. They're just trolls. But then I know personally people that can't wait to get these things.
Yeah, what the hell is wrong? It's denial. It's ignorance. It's stupidity. I don't know. There are a lot of things involved with decisions like that, too. Like, yeah, I'm going to get it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck. All right, let's jump to our readers here, see what we have. You've got some cancer stories, I guess, at the top. That's the first one. Doctors seeing explosion in cancer.
Yep. This is from a medical practitioners group.
Okay.
First one says, I am so sad. I keep getting calls from people who are now suffering from cancers after the Moderna jab. How are we handling this? One answer, I just lost a patient to cancer. She had 3 jabs. She was pretty far along when she came to me and didn't do any of the therapies I recommended. She died within 6 months of diagnosis. She was in her mid-50s and had 2 adopted teenagers that are now without a mom again. It is extremely sad, and I have no idea what the answer is. I fear the next 5 years is going to be devastating.
No question.
And another one says...
Yeah, go ahead.
Here is what is scarier. Most of my patients are unvaxxed, and younger people are showing up with cancer. Rectal cancer, thyroid, pancreatic, testicular...
How can that be, younger people? They have literally no immune system. Their P53 has been suppressed. Cancer can walk right in.
Well, don't forget, these are unvaxxed. These are unvaxxed.
Well, I'm not worried about that so much as I am shedding anymore. But, yeah, you're quite right. Here's another one. This is a... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we want to suspect or blame the vax, and I know that that's a huge part of this, but I think we would be remiss if we weren't also considering the damage from the virus and the damage from whatever spike proteins, other proteins that are being shed. It's really doing a number on people's immune systems.
Right. Don't discount this virus. There was a real effort in the beginning to tell everyone, well, it's just like a cold. You'll get over it in a few days, and it's gone. That may have been the case 2.5 years ago. But now we have a mutated variants, a number of them, and they are apparently much more pathological than the original. That's the best I can guess, Sam.
You know, I think one thing that may have happened is that we've been injecting people who either had the virus or still had the virus at some low level in their bodies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they received an injection that contained a synthetic version of the fusion protein for that virus. And I think that the virus that was present in these people at the time might have acquired that fusion protein. And so you've got some kind of chimeric virus that's quite different from the original one, and probably mm-hmm. hardier in terms of, you know, with having these pseudouridines in the mRNA makes it, well, it gives it a different shape, a different three-dimensional shape when the protein is produced, but it makes it almost impossible to break down, if it breaks down at all. Those pseudouridines, we don't really have the enzymes in the body or in our cells to break those down like we would for a normal virus. And I know I've read many reports of people who believe they had COVID early on, 2020 maybe, and, you know, they remember it as being like a bad flu. They didn't say it was nothing, but it was, you know, a bad flu. They got over it and went on to live their life, didn't take the vax, but ended up being around vax people and got something that really knocked them for a loop. And they said, no, it wasn't like that first go around. You know, this was something much, much different. So it's hard to know what that is, you know?
Right. The people behind this horror, the satanic people behind this, are working probably around the clock, playing with various biological organisms, viral or bacterial, doesn't matter. They're able to create whatever they want. It's just, it's beyond science fiction now, the possibilities. Here's another doctor. This is that doctor who just joined, I guess, a practice or has his own practice now. And he says, this is interesting. First few days in my new job, now this is a practitioner, it's a doctor. My mind is blown. 1,500 plus vax injured, many abnormal immunoglobulin levels, low CD4, CD8, T lymphocyte counts, reactivated herpes family of viruses, autoimmune issues, endocrine disorders, worsening pulmonary and cardiovascular diseases, worsening. They're on the way out, is what he's saying. What a cluster F this is. And it's he blames the quaxine for it. He's right. And he's seeing it. This is a doctor. 1,500 after the first few days on the job. That's seeing a lot of patients.
I think what this might mean is he came into a practice where they are treating...
Already on the patient list. Yeah.
Yeah. Actively treating 1,500 plus.
He's...
1,500 plus vax injured.
He steps in, and he's got 50. After 3 days, he realizes he's got 1,500 people already there, their clients, so to speak, and they've got all these disorders. And what he's probably asking himself, what the hell have I walked into here?
Yeah.
I would. I don't know. I don't even know how to approach these things because there's nothing really to be done. You're going to get some symptomatic relief with the right regimen of supplements, but it's not going to change the DNA damage to your body. These shots are DNA shots. They're DNA bioweapons. Fair enough?
Oh, they've damaged the genetic expression probably permanently. There may have been some integration into your DNA. Or this thing could be overriding your DNA in a somewhat permanent way.
Right.
I don't know that, you know, anybody's figured out how to turn off the continual production of the spike protein.
No. Here's a little bit more from these. No, they haven't. These practitioners. This is the one that you've got listed in there as it's on September 4th. Can't wait for the new booster.
Oh, I think
Remember
we
that?
Read this. Yeah.
Did we?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. That was interesting, too. But there are people who are going to line, they're rolling up their sleeves. They're already psychologically getting ready for it. They want it. They think it's going to do some good. And
mm-hmm.
the terrible irony of this is it's not a vaccine. It's not a booster. It's a bioweapon. And I just don't understand. You'd think that intelligent people would be able to at least learn a little bit about what the other side is saying, our side of the ledger, unless they live fully and totally and they're completely invested in the commercial television flat screen industry and they're advanced disciples of screen lifestyle. I don't know what else to think, because they're not thinking.
I think that's it. You know, at this point, they're going to resist the truth as long as they can.
Right. Okay. We have a whole lot of readers. Maybe we'll, on Monday, we'll see. We get Nurse Anne will be back here pretty soon. We might just spend some time getting caught up with our anecdotal stories of real people with real health crises. These are not jokes. They're bad. All right. Anything to add?
Nope. That should do it.
All right. Go get yourself a root beer float.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Have a good weekend, everyone. Good night.
Okay, gang. We'll be right back with hour 3 and lots ahead. Stay tuned.